Firstly, my apologies if you're expecting Gerald to be standing up here. You have to make do with me today. And we're going to be looking at Colossians chapter 1, verse 15 to 23, the chapter that Milkis just read. And you might be wondering, why have I chosen that? Because we've had two passages read to us today. One, the classic Christmas story, Mary, Joseph, the shepherds. Why have I chosen Colossians 1 from verse 15? Why have I chosen that? Well, Mary, Joseph and the shepherds, they all have a part to play in the Christmas story. But the real hope of Christmas is about one person, Jesus. It's all about the person in the manger. And this text that Milkis has just read is speaking about him. So the he is the image of the invisible God, for by him, this person is Jesus. He is like no one else. Haven't you ever thought it strange that over 2,000 years after his birth, people are still gathering together all over the world to sing praises, to celebrate this birth? And it's not even like it's a blockbuster birth. It's not like it was a royal birth. There was no room for him even at the inn, so he had to be born in a manger, a place where animals are fed. Contrast that maybe to the royal birth that we know about this year, Harry and Meghan, their baby Archie, one that was all over the news and was believed to have taken place in their cottage, which was renovated for just a mere £3 million in time for his arrival. An impressive birth, but I can guarantee that we're not going to be gathering like this to sing praises to baby Archie year after year. So what is it about Jesus? He appeared to have such a low-key beginning, but why is his name still praised today? Why are people gathering all over the world and testifying that this man changes everything? Why have people all over history been willing to even die for believing in his name? And why does history even itself split upon his birth, BC to AD? Well, briefly, hopefully, because I know Christmas dinner's on your minds, we're going to be looking at two questions to answer that. One, who is Jesus? And two, why did he come to earth? And hopefully by the end, we'll start to see what the big deal is all about. So, Apostle Paul wrote this passage that we've read, Colossians, and he wrote it to believers whose lives had been changed by Jesus. But they were in danger because there was people around them starting to say, don't put all your trust in Jesus. He's not everything. Put your trust in other things too. Believe in other people too. Jesus isn't that important. So what's Paul's solution? He writes this letter to the Colossians and simply reminds them what we're going to look at today. Who is Jesus? What has he done? Because that is the remedy for every danger that we will face in life. It's the only two questions that matter, not just now, but forever. So, the first question, who is Jesus? Who is this baby that we see in those nativity scenes? Well, how is this for a description of him? Let's read our first three verses of our passage again, verse 15 to 17. Let's read it. Verse 15. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities. All things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. What a description. Paul gets straight to the point. Jesus is God as a man. Verse 15. He is the image of the invisible God. So what do you make of such a description? Doesn't it shock you? The claim here and throughout the rest of the Bible is that God became a human. This baby in the manger is none other than God himself. Maybe you sit here and you're not amazed by that, or you think it means nothing to you. Well, are you in awe at the world around us? Have you ever looked out at the stars and felt tiny? Have you ever watched Blue Planet and thought, wow, what a world we live in? Have you ever heard about those 100 billion galaxies out there and thought, how? Well, we live in an amazing universe, and it surely is beyond our comprehension. But if we think the universe is amazing and out of our grasp, how much more the one who made it? That's the claim here. Paul uses the whole universe in these verses, invisible and visible, to try and give us some scale of how great Jesus is. And as he does this, we will briefly see now five things about Jesus that we see in those three verses that I just read. We've already seen he's God. Now, what does that mean? Well, number one, the first thing we see, Jesus is ruler over all. Verse 15, the second half of verse 15. He's described as the firstborn of all creation. This is another way of saying Jesus is higher than all things. He's ruler over it all. So that's the first thing. Number two, Jesus is creator of all things. Verse 16, he's the one through whom all things are made. But he's not just the creator. Number three, he's the purpose of all things. Second half of verse 16. Not just things were made through him, but for him. Now that's shocking because a lot of people ask the question today, what's the meaning of my life? What's the purpose of my life? What am I doing here? And normally when we ask that question, we're thinking it's something we have to do. What's my purpose? I have to do something. But here we see it's not so much about doing something, but knowing someone. All things were made for Jesus. That means you were made for Jesus. All things, animals, seas, mountains, all made for Jesus. So he's the purpose of all things. Number four, he is eternal. Verse 17, he is before all things. So yes, there was a moment in history where the Son of God became a man, which is what we celebrate at Christmas. But there was never a moment where the Son of God did not exist. He's eternal. No beginning, no end. Finally, number five, he holds everything together. Verse 17. Things may appear chaotic around us. It might feel at the moment like we're standing on really shaky ground. Election, Brexit. Not to mention as we look out at the world around us and it feels even more shaky. Global warming, natural disasters, always seemingly on the brink of war. There's always some war going on. But here we see Jesus holds everything together. He is the sustainer. Without him, everything would fall apart, just like that. And it's also down to the tiniest scale too. Not even a sparrow falls to the ground without his say-so. The very fact you're breathing right now is because of him. So arguably, the reason why we spend our lives in such anxiety is because we're the ones who is trying to hold everything together. When our hands are too small for such a job. Did you notice that in our passage that Milkis read, the word all is repeated 8 times? Surely Paul's making something clear here. Jesus has all things in his hands. Everything you can think of, and his hands are the only ones that are suitable for such a task. So in conclusion to our first point, who is Jesus? He is none other than God himself. This baby in the manger is God in the flesh. There really is no one like him. And this speaks to you today more than you realize. Because we spend our lives looking for someone to pin all our hopes on. Someone who is faithful, steady, powerful. Someone who understands us. Someone who can give us everything we've ever been looking for. Now, Jesus is the only one who can carry the full weight of our expectations. All other things crumble. Everything we pin our hopes on, everything we lean on falls apart at some point in our lives. Jesus is the only one who can carry the full weight of our expectations. We were made through him, for him, and he holds us together. So surely, after that, our response is to praise him and worship him with all our hearts. But it doesn't stop there, because we've seen how Jesus is high above all things. But he left that high place. He did something. He stooped low. He became a tiny baby lying in the arms of Mary. Now, as I was thinking of how to try and capture that, how low he went, the closest example I can think of in a human way is, let's say, the queen leaves her palace and goes and lives among the homeless for the rest of her life. She chooses to do it. She leaves out all her royalty. That gives a tiny, tiny glimpse of what Jesus did. Tiny. It's even ridiculous to even compare it. It's hard to explain how low he went when he became a man. So that leads us to our second question. Why did Jesus enter our world as a baby? We've seen that he's God. Why did he come to earth? And we're at verse 18 now in our passage. And verse 18 is the right time to ask that question, because Paul's focus changes here. So far, we've seen the whole universe mentioned. Now, the focus turns to the church. We've seen that Jesus is ruler over all creation. Now it says he's head of the church. What does that mean? Why does the focus change to the church? Because we see now the universe, the focus changes from universe to people. Because the church is another way of describing people all over the world who have come to know and trust Jesus. The church is not a building. It's a people all over the world. And here we have our answer for why Jesus came. This is the answer. He scaled heaven to earth to rescue a people. A people greater than anyone can number. A worldwide people. But why a rescue mission? What do we need rescuing from? Because we've already looked at how big and awesome the universe is. But Jesus rules over it all, as Paul says. Why, when we look at our world today, do we see that something's gone horribly wrong? I think we would all agree that there's evil, suffering, disease, death. So if Jesus is in charge, what's he doing about it all? How has this happened? It's one of the top questions asked to Christians today. Well, this is precisely why Jesus came to earth, because we need rescuing from this. The good creation God has made has been ruined. We as human beings were made in God's image. We were made to know him, to love one another. We failed from the very beginning to do that. We rejected God, rebelled against him, something the Bible calls sin, an uncomfortable word. It's basically talking about how we've rejected God and his rule. And we've gone our own way, done as we've pleased. And if you think about it, if God is the source of all things good, if God is the source of love, life, joy, peace, when you reject him and go the opposite way, what do you expect should follow? Surely, death would follow instead of life. Darkness would follow instead of light. Chaos instead of peace. You name it. So we are now this corrupted image of God, living in a ruined world. We sin, we reject him, we want nothing to do with him. So actually, we're without God and without hope. That's our situation. But thankfully, God doesn't leave us this way. The headline of the whole Bible is that God has come to rescue broken people like us in Jesus. That is the Christmas message. We've already seen that Jesus is God. Now we see why he came. Firstly, he stoops low. We've said that already. He becomes a man. Lives this perfect sinless life on our behalf. But then he goes lower. Lower than anyone could have expected. He goes to a cross and dies a death that we deserved, a brutal death. We thought it was amazing enough that God becomes a man, but now we see this man hanging on a cross for the sins of people all over the world. But it doesn't stop there. He goes to the grave, he dies, but 3 days later he rises. That's why Paul describes him in verse 18 as the firstborn from the dead. That means all who come to him, put their trust in him, will experience resurrection too. He's the firstborn. We will follow. Now, we had a funeral here the other day, this week, and it was a very emotional time. But it was also strangely hopeful. I've never experienced this. But I've been to two funerals in this church, and both funerals, you get sorrow because we're missing the person, but you get hope because we know that he is with the Lord. Andy is with the Lord. That is the hope that Jesus brings. Hope beyond death. That's why Paul goes on to say, verse 20, Jesus makes peace by the blood of his cross. Surely peace is what we long for most. If you ask most people on this earth what they wanted for Christmas, I'm sure peace would be there somewhere. And not just temporary peace, but lasting peace. I'm talking peace within, not just peace in our land. Well, sin is our root reason for our lack of peace. It's what separates us from God. It's what puts a death judgment over us. So as long as sin hangs over us, we cannot know complete peace. We are filled with guilt, shame, anxiety, in a life lived against God. There is no complete lasting peace. But Jesus comes and sheds his blood for us. Our sin is paid for, fully removed, and we're fully forgiven. He takes the punishment we deserve, the death we deserve, and dies in our place so we can know everlasting peace with God. This is who Jesus is, God as a man, the greatest man in history. And this is what he came to do, achieve the greatest act in history, dying on a cross so that we can know peace forever as sinners. Do you see why this is called good news? Do you see why the Christmas message brings such hope? So finally, what do you make of all of this? Because verse 21 turns very personal. Paul says, and you. And he's speaking to the Colossian believers, but also us here today. We've looked at things on a huge scale today. We've looked at how Jesus is supreme over everything you can think of in the whole universe and invisible. But also, we've seen how he's come to rescue a worldwide people all over the world, a number that cannot be counted. Verse 23, Paul writes, the gospel is being proclaimed in all creation. This is a huge deal. This good news is huge. It's worldwide. But at the same time, it's very personal. Where do you stand in all of this? This is for you. We give and receive gifts at Christmas. But the greatest gift that you can receive is God himself. To know him, not just now, but forever. Jesus is the greatest gift you can ever receive. And it's a gift we cannot afford to refuse. Because the consequences are drastic and eternal. That's why Jesus went to the length that he did. Coming as a baby, going to a cross and dying a brutal death. Through it all, we can see Jesus saying, I do not want you to go to that place of eternal darkness. The place the Bible calls hell. Look at the lengths he went to rescue us from that. So he offers himself to you today. His birth, his life, his death is offered as a gift for all who receive it. You don't need to earn it. You cannot. That's why it's called a gift. But you need to receive it. Jesus says, ask and receive. Come to him. Ask him to save you. Put your trust in him. Make it personal. Will you receive him? He's offered himself as a gift. That's the Christmas message.